The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to whatever your commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN.
I'm Ryan Lamer from Yahoo.
I'm Sean McAdoo from The Athletic.
And you're in Puck Soup. By the way, welcome back, Sean.
Thank you. I heard you guys missed me.
People were
deeply
wondering why you were so quiet last episode.
Just,
and then it turned out you were on vacation.
We didn't announce it because we're just stupid idiots.
Just didn't have a lot to say, you know. Just kind of you guys were covering it.
I've known Lambert for maybe now
decade.
Over a decade, at least a decade, maybe more,
a little more. And my 10-year anniversary at Yahoo is a week from today.
Oh, that's so fantastic. They probably give you, a purple Swatch watch for a 10-year anniversary?
I don't think I'm going to be getting anything at all, but that's fine.
I didn't know until about 30 seconds before this show that you attended the Monday Night Raw where, spoiler, Vince McMahon was revealed as the higher power in
the Ministry of Darkness.
The Steve Austin Ministry of Darkness feud. What was the? Can you take us back, Ryan, to that moment in which Vince McMahon revealed himself? He took off the hood,
sure,
and said, "It was me, Austin. It was me all along."
So, I don't know if I've ever said this publicly, but I do have like a real my uncle works for Nintendo connection to WWF/E dating back since the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. When I was a little-ish kid, probably 8, 9, 10 years old, something like that.
Little Lambert.
That's right. My aunt and uncle and cousin moved to a new house. And I was over there one summer, a summer day, and his neighbor across the street was like mowing his lawn, and I was wearing some kind of a wrestling shirt. And he was like, "Hey, are you Kevin's nephew?" And I said, "Yeah." And he's like, "And you like wrestling?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "My wife is Howard Finkel's sister." And I was like, "Are you serious, dude?" You know, and he was like, "Yeah, 100%. And like, "Do you really like wrestling?" I was like, "Yeah, I love it. I watch it every week, whatever." And he's like, "Okay, anytime you want to go to wrestling, let your uncle know, and I will get you tickets through Howard Finkel."
Please tell me that you had the pleasure of dining at the home of Henrietta Finkel.
She's
like, "Would you like more turkey? Here is the giblets."
I never met the Fink, but he came through with tickets for, I would say, the entirety of the Attitude Era. Without fail, to pay-per-views, to Raws, to house shows, everything. And so, yeah, I was at the Higher Power, and always really good seats, too. I was at the Higher Power Raw. I was at the Raw where Mick Foley won the title in Worcester.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. A couple other ones that were like, "Man, I can't believe I was here for that," just because it seemed like every week back then.
On the Higher Power one, though,
yep. Yeah.
Like, do you recall if everybody in the arena knew at that point it was going to be McMahon, or like, what was the vibe? Were you surprised when it happened?
I was a bit of a smark at the time, Greg. This is 98,
no.
99.
No.
So, yeah, that's right. I was pretty sure it was Vince McMahon. And then the second he hit the ramp, like to walk out and he was walking with like his hands out like a weird priest or whatever, and he had a hood on, obviously. I was like, oh, that's Vince McMahon. 100% that's Vince McMahon. And I mean, I remember the arena going batshit. Like, again, Mick Foley winning the title is the loudest applause I've ever heard. Like, insane. Just crazy. But like, I remember the place going ballistic when it was Vince McMahon. So
chat me up. Who booked this shit?
I want to say it was probably Vince.
I was on the Richard Deitch podcast this week, and he also had Conrad Thompson on, and at no point was there an opportunity for me to do a Conrad Thompson impression, and I was so pissed off. By the way, my favorite Howard Finkel thing of all time was when MSG Network in New York used to run the MSG house shows as just like a 3-hour, you know, stationary camera block.
Yep. Closed circuit.
And it was amazing. Oh, it was a closed circuit. Yeah, exactly. It was so fucking cool. And my favorite thing about Howard Finkel was that at some point during the show, he would come out and announce the next card at MSG. So people would be encouraged to, you know, buy tickets that day for that show. So it was always amazing to have him be like, you know, because it was like he had a secret. It was always like, you know, it would be like, the Honky Tonk Man. And then everybody would go, boo, we'll take on Dick the Snake Roberts. And everybody like, yeah, motherfucker, Dick
the Snake. That's so cool,
and then
dude.
You'd run to go get tickets to see that on the next card. Goddamn. Wrestling, baby.
It's the best.
Oh, by the way, we're going to probably do a wrestling bonus episode on the Patreon next month for WrestleMania, as an FYI. So keep your eyes out open for that. The NHL player poll, I'm sorry, NHL PA player poll came out. Their first line is often imitated but never duplicated. So that's a shot at your employer,
yes,
Sean.
Yes, it was. Yep.
Which I thought was, you know, cheeky. So Connor McDavid won everything, basically, that he was up for. I still find it amazing. Do you think that it's a situation where when the question is, who is the player you'd select to start a franchise with, do you think that there is a list of like 10 guys and they just had people vote on it? Because
no.
Who in their right mind would pick Nathan MacKinnon over either Connor McDavid
or Austin
Matthews?
There's clearly not a list
Miko
of guys
Rantanen.
Because like all of these answers, it's like the other section is like 70%. It's unless they only do it for a few, it seems like they're just getting all these random. But yeah, you're right. Like even picking – like I'm a Leafs fan, but picking Austin Matthews over Connor McDavid as a franchise starter is bizarre to me. Like – I kind of get why somebody might say Crosby, even though obviously picking somebody in their 30s would be insane. Like at least it's like, you know, you're just picking the best player. But yeah, McKinnon,
yeah, he spent 12
Matthews
years as the best player in the world, so
yeah,
it makes a little bit.
We can let that one pass, but yeah, like I don't know. Well, they think McKinnon's. There's more people who thought McKinnon was the best forward than Kucherov, which is. Also,
there was more people that thought, slightly more people thought that Patrice Bergeron would be better to start a franchise with than Nathan MacKinnon. So apparently it's like a bunch of fourth liners that are like, well, you got to win a face-off at some point if you're building a franchise.
That's true.
Yeah, no, MacKinnon rated higher than Kucherov, which to me is like obvious Russian bias.
Also, he's a wing, Kucherov. Yeah. So
also, it bears mentioning that Alexander Barkov was both the fifth highest vote getter for the best forward in the entire fucking NHL. Like your options are Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby, MacKinnon, Kucherov, Matthews, everybody. Barkov finishes fifth and yet somehow finishes first for most underrated player.
Well, so I mean,
possible.
Right. I know this is like your big ballywick, right? Like you're always mad about who's underrated or whatever. And I think the argument that I would make for this is anybody who's smart about hockey, generally speaking, is like Sacha Barkov kicks ass. We all love him. Everybody thinks he's awesome. He's a pro's pro, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But like could like, if you said, give me a list of the 200 best hockey players, do you think the average fan's coming up with Sacha Barkov? I'm not sure.
I don't know. You're assuming that the average fan doesn't know anybody on the Panthers.
Right. Yeah, pretty much.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, that's a fair assumption, but I just find it hilarious. Like, these are NHLPA players, though, who are like, he's the fifth best forward in hockey, and also nobody appreciates how good he is.
Well, maybe he's the third best player in hockey. Right? Like for real, though.
There's only one guy. You're right. It is in my bailiwick. It drives me fucking mental when people are like, Nick Backstrom, who's sixth in points since 2012 and now has the Stanley Cup to his credit, is underrated. There's only one guy on in the top five here that I think is actually underrated at this point, which is Mikko Rantanen. Like, the other ones were Barkov, Backstrom, Point, who everybody salivates over, and Kuznetsov, who's fucking incredible. But, like, Rantanen, you could say, you know, is he a product of McKinnon and Landeskog? Is he really good on his own? Like, you could legit say that he might be underrated at this point.
I don't know. I mean, more than Barkov? More than... Christ. More than Mitch Marner? Like, I was shocked Mitch Marner wasn't on that list. Mitch Marner's incredible.
Mm. I don't know. Can you be underrated when you're in Toronto, though?
In Toronto, maybe not.
That's,
yeah.
Maybe not. But I thought Barkov was the right choice, actually. That's, you know,
yeah,
he's
sounds about right to me.
That works for me.
I'm telling, it's the Louis Erickson rule. You can't be underrated for 5 years running. And that's what Barkov is right now.
Is that true?
He's at least been the most underrated player for at least like the last two or three of these.
Wow.
He's fourth for the Selke, went to the NHL Awards last year. I don't think he's underrated anymore. I think your point is that is the only one that's salient, which is that he might be underrated because he's playing for the Panthers, yeah. And they're suck.
I think it also depends who's doing the underrating. Like, is he underrated by his fellow players or by the media or by the fans? Like, I think you'd get three different results on that. I think players clearly know Barkov's good. The media has slowly but surely caught up. I'm not sure Joe average fan is there quite yet.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
But that's the point, though, is that the players said he was underrated, though.
Yeah, but
that's
but
the
they
weird
didn't say
part
by
about
who,
it.
They're not saying by them. It wasn't who's underrated
by
fellow players.
I get what you're
right?
saying now. Yeah. Well, they're wrong. Brad Marchand won Best Trash Talker and Worst Trash Talker. Brad Marchand, the morning of this podcast recording, lashed out at Joe Haggerty of Hacks with Hags, saying that Joe Haggerty is too busy, quote, at the snack bar to watch the Bruins play hockey.
Well, I mean, so, okay. He said that in response to Haggerty saying the Bruins might be better off without Torrey Krug.
Which is insane. Yeah.
What a take. That's true. That's like real Joe Haggerty hours. That's incredible shit. But like, yeah. My take on this was, you know, I think that's a real Wayne Gretzky. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Like, Brad Marchand's just talking shit to everybody all the time. Yeah. And sometimes he really crushes a guy, and sometimes it's a swing and a miss. But he's Russ Westbrook. He's putting up 50. He's Kobe. He's putting up 50 shots a game and seeing what happens.
The other thing is, like, what is the difference between good and bad trash talk? Like, if I'm playing against Brad Marchand and he says something that really hurts my feelings, is that good trash talk or bad trash talk? Or I don't know. I found it weird that this was the only question where they did a bad version of the question. Like,
who's the most overrated player
you
in the league?
You cowards. Yes, I want overrated. I want worst fans. You cowards. If you're going to take shots at the other people who do these polls and you're going to claim that you're like the only one worth, you've got to ask real questions. Don't be such
wimps.
They
used to do like worst ice and worst arena. They used to do that in the poll.
Yeah.
They got rid of that.
They don't even do that.
The word worst is an interesting one, because you're right. Like, is worst that Marchand is willing to go after, you know, your mother?
Yeah.
Or is worst that he's like a trash talker on the level of a Biff Tannen? Like, what does worst mean? And then also the interesting thing for me is to speak to your point, Ryan, this makes me think that Brad Marchand is the walking embodiment of the movie Deadpool, where it's just throw every joke you possibly can at the screen, and then a few of the dick jokes will stick, and then some of them won't. But overall, you're going to be entertained by it. The real interesting thing about this poll is Nick Cousins. Were either any of us aware of Nick Cousins being A, a trash talker, B, one of the best, or C, one of the worst?
No.
No. Who cares?
Like, where's that come from? It's very odd. So this one I thought was interesting. Who is going to be the best TV analyst once they retire? PK Subban won. Yandel was second. Then Ryan Reeves, Ron Hainsey, and Alex Stalock, which is a real rando pick.
Yeah, I was shocked by that too.
I've said this. I said this on ESPN, and I so I'll say it here. I don't think PK is going to be a great TV analyst. I feel like he is no longer as candid as he used to be now that he's become so calculated and making his own little, you know, TV reality shows and such, and working with the Hollywood marketing people. Like, I don't feel like he's nearly as interesting as he used to be.
I agree with that 100%.
Yeah. I mean, he's
but
yeah,
once he
I
gets
still
out
think
of the
he's
league,
gonna be
does
good,
he
though.
Get that power back? Like, does he does he just not give a shit anymore? And he's willing to say what he should be saying when he's analyzing the game. That's the question.
I think he's going to be he's going to be like smarter Jeremy Roenick. Like, I don't think he's going to be like X's and O's breaking everything down guy, but he'll be the guy who you can just put him on in during the intermission and let him, through force of personality, be entertaining. You can send him to go do a segment somewhere, dress up like a leprechaun or whatever else.
That's the thing.
And, you know, and he'll be able to do that, and yet in a way that'll probably be funnier and smarter than Roenick is able to pull off. So yeah, I think he's going to be really good.
I agree with that take. Like, I think that he could go do that Roenick thing better than Roenick, because I think that he naturally knows how to interact with other human beings better than Roenick does. And I think could probably mine the humor out of a situation. Like, put PK in the leprechaun outfit at the Winter Classic. It's going to be exponentially funnier than whatever Roenick did.
And plus, it leaves open my dream scenario, because I don't know if you guys have seen this down in the States, but up here in Canada, we've seen PK Subban does a dynamite Don Cherry impression, like an amazing one.
Oh, he does a great Don Cherry.
And that's my dream is that when it is time for Don Cherry to go, that they just replace him with PK Subban doing a Don Cherry impression and don't change anything else or announce it. And they just leave like all of these 70 and 80 year old Canadians watching TV going, what? Is Don different? Is there something? I can't quite put my finger on it. And just being confused and frightened.
And because the suits are only slightly like quieter. They're still outrageous suits. They're just slightly quieter.
Yeah.
It'd be amazing when all of a sudden Don Cherry just keeps on taking runs at the Canadiens, like over and over again every week. And people are like, there's something up with this guy. What happened to him? Who would make the best GM once they retire? I can see myself behind the desk making personnel choices, and you know, Chris Kunitz is probably my assistant GM at this point. And
Chris Kunitz is probably his first line winger.
Sidney Crosby, best NHL GM once they retire. Sure. I mean, is that just like Sid's smart an overachiever?
Yeah, and let's just point out, though, Sidney Crosby won this with 5.5% of the vote. There's
right, so there was just 800 guys got named.
Yeah, nobody knows. Basically, nobody thinks. Jason Spezza being second was kind of interesting to me, because I never really thought of him as that kind of guy. But apparently,
77% said other.
Yeah,
that's a lot. That's a pretty fucking big.
So
chunk
basically,
to say
you got
other.
300 votes. So basically, 15 people voted for Spezza, 16 said Crosby, and the other 270 said somebody else who, you know, probably was just like the guy sitting next, the last person they had a halfway intelligent conversation with.
This guy is from Cole Harbour, so we're going to take him first. Sid, he's tracking to be a fourth round pick. I know him. Went to the same gym with him for a while. Good guy. Let's get him first rounder. Fucking Sid.
Do it.
Best current female hockey player was Hillary Knight over Marie-Philippe Poulin, which I wouldn't agree with. I think Marie-Philippe Poulin's a better player. I also think that maybe a goalie should have won. This is an interesting one. Would you be in favor of a regular season game featuring nicknames on jerseys, etc.? And 66.8% of players said yes. Now, this makes me wonder whether it'll be a couple things I'm wondering about here. First of all, will it just be everybody's name with a Y at the end, like true hockey nicknames?
Yep.
And then also, will it be the nicknames that they use in the locker room or the nicknames that are for public consumption?
Yeah. So this is they're stealing the baseball idea. And it's a cool idea. And you're like, yeah, that would be fun. And then you like scroll further to their list of what they consider the best nicknames in the league. And you kind of go, maybe not. because right. because if
that's a good
tuna is the very best nickname in the entire league, maybe we don't need to be marketing our ability to come up with nicknames.
Yeah, that's a good point. Tuna won for, I think, best nickname. Tuna Tartar, right, was the nickname.
Mm-hmm.
And then what were the... I'm looking for the nickname list here. Best shot, best goalie.
Breadman was number two.
There was a few
two.
Other ones.
It was Breadman.
What was number two?
So Artemi Breadman Panarin, Marco Snacks Dano, Christian Stinky Fisher, which, all right, and Connor McJesus David. Which I guarantee there's nobody nobody is calling Connor McDavid McJesus to his face. Like, nobody's like, hey, correct. McJesus. Like, that's not, that's, but I don't mind that one because that, my take on the nickname thing is we always say, well, how come there's no good nicknames? And it's because the media and the fans stopped giving nicknames. We started listening to the players tell us what their nicknames were, and they give each other nicknames like Tuna and Stinky. And, you know, at least McJesus is one of those, like, somebody outside of his direct line of sight tried to come up with something, because that's where all the good nicknames. Like, nobody was, like, you know, nobody was in back in the 50s was walking around calling people, you know, by cool nicknames in the dressing room. They were just calling each other Gord, you know, like, there's no...
So, do you think Tuna Tartar might have been an influence by The Office with Ed Helms referring to John Krasinski as Tuna all the time.
Yeah, because when I think of blank tartar, I think of steak.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So that's a bit of a match game question there.
No,
you know?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, right. Gene Rayburn. So it's definitely steak tartar. I agree. I'm guessing that's probably Office influenced. Where does Marco Snacks Dano come from?
I don't know. That's one I don't get. Like, the only other Dano I can think of is Paul Dano of There Will Be Blood fame.
Marco Paul Dano.
That's right. Just name him Eli Sunday. Maybe he got that name because he abandoned his child, everybody would be saying.
Your point's taken, though, Sean, that we've dropped the ball on nicknames. Right. And I do wonder if there are enough to actually,
like Bobby Hull wasn't walking into a dressing room in the 60s and people are like, hey, Golden Jet, like that wasn't. And then some media person overheard that and was like, oh, is that your nickname? Like that was somebody, you know, sitting up in a press box or wherever that came up with that. And everybody just agreed to use it. And, you know, instead now we just go up to people like, what's your nickname? And they're like, Smithy. And we're like, all right, this is Smithy. And it's like,
right. Like it, if that happened in the 70s, like Wayne Gretzky, we'd all just call him Gretz. That's it.
Yeah.
There'd be no great one.
Yeah. That wasn't, you know, nobody was like calling somebody the little ball of hate just, you know, as they were playing cards.
A cursory search for snacks for Marco Dano does not turn up anything, and the more I think about it, the more I'm wondering if it's a drug reference, to be quite candid with you.
I type Dano snacks into Google as we're doing, and apparently there is a snack company called Dano.
That could be
that,
it.
That I've never heard of, but that's what comes up first, so I don't know. Don't say journalism is dead.
What's your favorite sport to follow outside of hockey? To the surprise of no one, 30% said golf, and then football, and then soccer, and then baseball, and then basketball. So that makes sense. That tracks.
Yeah.
Although I thought soccer might have been number one. There's a lot of soccer fans that are also hockey players. Not only the European guys, but also a lot of the Canadians and Americans.
I was gonna say that would be mostly European driven though, and they make up what, like 30% of the league. I can see that being.
Yeah, and 0% of the competition committee as well.
And they love the Davis Cup over in – is that – that's the golf one, right? Davis Cup?
Yeah. Speaking of that, what did you guys think of Brian Burke saying that that the World Cup of Hockey will one day surpass the Olympics as the premier international hockey tournament
because in soccer it's the World Cup, in rugby it's the World Cup, so in hockey it'll be the World Cup.
Did you think there's any validity to that?
I thought it was about as good as his Austin Matthews take from last week. So
it's, I mean,
so he's on a roll, is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, he's killing it, man.
It's never going to pass it if the players are consistently going to the Olympics. If the players are not going to the Olympics, then we it will, because we've already seen that. Like, there was a time when the Canada Correct. Cup was the number one tournament because nobody cared about watching Russian pros destroy a bunch of U.S. or Canadian like high school kids. But
my favorite Russian prose is Tolstoy, by the way.
But the thing that's going to be interesting to me is
guy, but sure.
What happens?
There's a shock.
What happens if the NHL keeps doing this, like some years we go, some years we don't go thing? That'll be interesting to me. If the World Cup is something that happens every 4 years and it's consistent and predictable, and the Olympics, every time we have to wait till a year and a half before to see whether Gary Bettman's going to let people go. I could see that wearing on some fans. Like, that's the only scenario where a World Cup is going to potentially be more popular than a Olympics featuring the players, if we're all just kind of worn out from.
Well, I think he was talking about for the players, though, and that is that for me is only if they just stop letting players go to the Olympics,
right.
Like,
because in
soccer, even forced, if
if they don't. They don't like go every other year. It's still, you're like, well, I can go to the Olympics like once, maybe twice in my career. And that'll be a huge, that might even make it a bigger deal to be able to go once in your career. But yeah, like if there's any Olympic participation at all, I feel like it's always going to be the Olympics. And if they, you know, take that away from them, they'll go, oh, World Cup's good as well. And by the time, you know, by three Olympic cycles, when everybody who's ever played in an Olympics is as a pro is not there anymore, then that's a different story.
I also thought it was interesting that, like, you know, the World Cup in soccer has been going on since 1930.
Right.
And so obviously the World Cup of hockey doesn't have that kind of history to it, but it's also a situation where, you know, soccer in the Olympics is, to my knowledge, never really been a real big deal.
Because it's a U23 tournament, that's
yeah,
why.
Yeah, that's right. The thing, it's not the best of the best, right?
Right, but let's take the specifications of it out. Like, hockey in the Olympics has always been a big deal. It's been a centerpiece sport in the Winter Games for decades. So I just think the prestige of the sport in particular as an Olympic sport is different. And I'm with you. Like, you know, it's going to take generations before we find one that doesn't give a shit about winning an Olympic gold for your country in hockey. Like, especially, for God's sakes, if you're an American, like, if you're Canadian, it's a birthright. If you're American, you're living up to the standard of one of the greatest fables in all of sports history. So it's like, I can't foresee a situation where people are going to be looking at that giant fucking paperweight and being like, yeah, that's more important to me than a gold medal.
Agreed. Agreed. We got to get rid of the stupid trophy at the very least.
It sucks. That trophy
sucks
is so horrible.
So bad.
It's terrible.
Like, how
do
you
think
it's
some like fancy trophy maker guy to make it?
Yep.
Isn't that a thing?
Yeah, and it was, like, unveiled and then, like, immediately...
Yeah, and everybody was like, oh, this, what's the word, sucks, so...
It wasn't, like, Frank Geary, was it? It wasn't, like, an architect or somebody who made it,
I feel
it,
like
right?
It was, yeah.
I feel like it was,
Frank
too,
Geary.
Yeah. Yeah. It's horrible.
It's
like,
bad.
You could go to your fucking local trophy shop where they make stuff for, like, peewee hockey and get it some... here's a simple thing. Put a fucking hockey player on top of the trophy. How hard is that, right?
That's right.
It's just the simplest thing. All right, Lambert, you're telling me and Sean about something involving the vote for best NHL mascot. Gritty
no
beat Carlton the Bear.
Gritty won.
Yupi Nash and Victor E. Green, who somehow made the top five. No Bailey or S.J. Sharkey, which I thought was a bit of an upset. But what's the deal with the Gritty vote here?
So Gritty, because, like, irony is dead, Gritty won with 69% of the vote. And somebody – and they actually specified that it was actually 69.4% of the vote. And somebody did the math, and I haven't checked the math, so if this is, like, just a made-up thing – don't hold it against me, but somebody checked the math and said Gritty actually got 69.420% of the vote. So he got 69.420. And if there's anything that, you know, the internet needed to happen, it was that.
It was that, clearly. I think the reason Bailey didn't make it is because, like, Bailey's doing, like, the slow burn heel turn where he's like become jealous and obsessed with Gritty, and he's like trying to lead the other mascots in this kind of mean girl revolution against him. So I think that clearly is being reflected in the player votes here.
He's going to waffle him at the NHL awards and spray paint a yellow stripe down his back.
He's going to cut
his beard. I think it's less heel turn that he's turning into Frank Grimes from The Simpsons, where it's him waving his arms exasperated that Gritty gets to do all of these things that he doesn't get to do, and that no one points out that Gritty is just doing the things that other mascots have done for decades.
Right.
And he's like he's like the last sane mascot on the planet watching this idiot run around and do shit and can't understand why more people aren't rallied to his cause. Very, very grimy, if you ask me.
Grimy. That could be that would be a good mascot name.
A Grimy?
Grimy.
Grimy sounds to me like the little sidekick mascot for Gritty. Like in minor league hockey, there's places that do two mascots.
Yes.
So Grimy would be his sort of mini-me or his – or Grimy's the one – I remember the Nets for a while had Duncan, who was a big dragon that used to walk around and shoot those party favors that go and shoot the little thing out. He used to have those in his nose, I think, or his mouth or some shit.
Very cool.
And then there was Super Dunk, who was the version of Duncan that would go and jump on the trampoline and do like the Phoenix Suns gorilla shit.
Yep.
So maybe Grimy is the Gritty stunt boy that will go and do the stunts that Gritty won't do.
Now we're talking.
Question is, what does Grimy look like, is my question.
A worse Gritty.
Yeah.
Could Grimy be Scott Hartnell?
Yeah, just make it a Scott Hartnell mask, and that's
no. I mean the actual Scott Hartnell. Could Scott Hartnell be Grimy?
I don't know. Can he get up like that? Like the gorilla?
Like the gorilla?
Yeah,
and the stunt work.
Yeah, I need him doing like dunks.
A down on his luck Scott Hartnell post retirement decides to take on the persona of a junior mascot
that would be
for the Philadelphia Flyers named Grimy.
That's at least an NHL Awards skit.
Oh, God. Don't.
Can we not talk about Gritty in the NHL Awards? Because I'm really afraid.
It's going to be bad.
How they're going to screw
this
up.
It's going to be really bad.
Yeah. Really, it's not going to be good. Again, I've laid out the scenario. I'll do it again. The only situation in which they won't screw up Gritty at the NHL Awards is if he comes out to give away the Hart Trophy and the mask is pulled off and it's
Gary
Bettman.
Yes.
That's the only thing that they can do. And listen, I put it out there. People have heard it. You could still do it. The joke's not spoiled. No one believes that you'll actually be that hip to do it. So go ahead
and also,
do it.
Nobody it's really fine. Listens to this podcast, like broadly speaking, in the hockey audience. So it's
I think our listenership is really strong inside the NHL front offices. Like, I don't doubt for a second that Colin Campbell has someone.
Yeah, he's on the Patreon for sure.
Put the podcast on for him and put it through his transistor radio so you can hear, you know, when we talk shit about, oh, a girl in the skills competition? That's horrible. You're ruining the All-Star game is what you're doing.
He's not wrong about that. I'm just kidding.
Oh, God. Jeez. Talk about your heel turns.
That's right.
All right. Like, if you want to go and watch Frank Grimes and The Simpsons, if you want to watch the NHL Awards whenever they're on TV, you're probably going to need two things. A television and a remote control to control said television. But here's the problem, boys. In this day and age, you probably got a billion remotes floating around. Your TV, your audio system, your Apple TV, all this other stuff. Your Roku. How are you going to get it all together? I'll tell you how. With the Remote Control Clutter Controlling Control Center by Cavo. Now listen. Control Center simplifies your home theater so you can control everything connected to your TV with one easy-to-use remote. With voice control, you can plug in your streamer, your sound system, your cable, your satellite, even your game console, and Control Center does it all. Don't waste time fiddling. with different remotes or weeding through messy search results to get the content you want. One universal voice remote controls it all. So just say you want to watch something and let Control Center handle the rest. In fact, you can enjoy every second of couch time and easily switch between content without moving a muscle, which is good because that is exactly what I don't want to do when I'm on the couch, which is to move a muscle. Let Control Center take your at-home entertainment experience from stressful to simple and enjoy what you want when you want it with ease. Here's the deal. Shop now and get 40% off Control Center with promo code SOUP. That's S-O-U-P, that spells SOUP. That's $59.95. 40% off the regular price of $99.95. Service plan is required. First 40 days free, 45 days free. Five extra days. Control Center is available at caavo.com. Cavo.com. CAAVO.com. And also at Best Buy. Control Center by Cavo. One remote that does it all. You may also want to use your remote, boys, at some point to flip on either Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure or Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey to refresh your memories, because inexplicably, it appears we are getting a Bill and Ted 3 in 2020.
Hell yes.
The announcement made by Keanu Reeves himself, John Wick himself, Neo himself.
And Alex Winter.
And Alex Winter.
I'm glad he was available. That must have been a tough negotiation, getting the other guy to...
He's done a lot of stuff like behind the scenes, I feel like. If I'm remembering my Alex Winter trivia right, I feel like he's been a director and a writer for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Keanu, at this point, has some gray in his beard, but otherwise is just like hair and two dark eye dots, and then like a trench coat is kind of how he looks. Alex Winter being in the Bill and Ted movie in 2020 made me feel a little uncomfortable. He looked a little too old for this shit, to kind of put it in Riggs and Murtaugh language. Yeah. But I'm happy to get the movie. It should be all right.
Yeah. Oh, he directed the documentary from last year about the Panama Papers.
Oh, well, there you go. He's gone serious then.
Yeah.
What do you want out of Bill and Ted 3, Ryan?
Well, so my thing is, I haven't seen either of them in a very long time, but I seem to recall that Bogus Journey ended with like God giving them the power to like save rock and roll or something. Like God literally imbuing them with like supernatural powers. So right. I don't know how you build on that.
Well, that of course was the inspiration for the classic Kiss tune, God Gave Rock and Roll to You, from Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. It was based on the very plot that you're speaking about in Bogus Journey. Sean, do you have love for the Bill and Ted films in your heart?
I do. I don't think I ever saw the second one. I think I saw the first one many, many years ago.
It's really good.
Yeah. No, it's pretty great. This will be fun. Like the doing like sequels to old movies and that, and you know, because there's no, you can't sell new ideas and everything is sort of overdone, but there is a point where it's just kind of silly and goofy enough that if people are on board and they're going to steer into it, I think it'll be good. I think it'll be, maybe not good, but I think it'll be what people want it to be.
Let me put it this way. I now trust Keanu implicitly. They say he's in a movie. Right. I go, I'll see you there. Because, no.
He had that one about cloning his dead family that came out that I don't think I trusted implicitly to go see.
What was this? Last year?
This was year.
Recently. I don't remember that. Oh, well, I didn't see it or even hear about it. So, but like, just from what I understand, he, through the sheer like will of being Keanu Reeves, like got the John Wick movie, the first one, made. And if that's going to be what he does, if his passion projects are all going to be that good, sold.
Mm-hmm. That would be Replicas, Keanu Reeves. Alice Eve was the
wife that he resurrected.
Thomas Middleditch was in it, once a future Puck Soup guest, and a real strong 19% on Metacritic for Replicas. I'm excited. I'm interested to see if William Sadler will return to play the Grim Reaper. He obviously was the best part of Bogus Journey. And I have to tell you, and I don't think we've ever talked about it on this show, because why the fuck would we have ever talked about Bill and Ted on the show? The concept of Wild Stallions, a.k.a. a rock band that makes music so beautiful that it brings the world together through song, is something that I've always really been enamored with. In full disclosure, there was a point in the last maybe dozen years when I kind of believed that Blink 182 could be Wild Stallions.
Oh boy.
Like a bunch of kids from California who come together and make music that brings the world together. And so I've been kind of waiting for them all to get back together to fulfill that destiny. But that was the band that I thought could be the real Wild Stallions, because I've always loved the concept of that.
That band, they but broke I'm, up, but that band could have been Diarrhea Planet. I firmly believe that to this day.
So Diarrhea Planet was your Wild Stallions?
I thought the music they made was so fun and so good. And, you know, I think they never got over the name being a big impediment to their credibility.
Yeah, I mean, Blink 182 made an album called Enema of the State.
And so one called Take Off Your Pants and Jacket. I mean, like,
Jacket,
they were,
yes. So they had their own obstacles in place as well. I mean, I know people being like, oh, the Beatles are Wild Stallions. I mean, no, they're not Wild Stallions. They didn't save. They happened, and then Vietnam still happened. I'm talking about a band that like much like when the aliens come to Earth and they come here and
yeah,
and the whole world joins
you
together.
You want it
and
to be like the Ozymandias moment at the end of Watchmen.
I don't want it to be. I don't see Blink 182 as a squid monster that the world bands around to defeat. In a nefarious scheme hatched by a super criminal. No, I don't see that. I'm seeing that it's that beautiful moment when the aliens come down, and as a world, we all come together and put our petty differences aside and realize that we are but a speck in this universe. Not the other thing, which is that the aliens come down and we decide en masse to fucking kill the aliens, and this is our real enemy. Like, I want the other scenario, which is much more of a Wild Stallions scenario than what you're talking about.
Sure.
Okay. The Tampa Bay Lightning won the President's Trophy since the last time that we did this podcast. And then last night, they beat the Capitals in overtime in the latest give me seven games of this shit moment here in the NHL, because it was a really great game.
It was awesome.
But I guess there's a chance they might not win the Cup. Which is sort of stunning to think about.
Very good chance they're not going to win the Cup.
It makes me sad, though. Like, I've written about this before. I want a juggernaut. I want them to roll through the playoffs, like five game series throughout the whole way.
I think it would be so good if they went 16-0. I think I said that last week. I think it would kick ass if they did that. But yeah, I mean, it's hockey. It's not going to happen. Yeah.
So I.
But do you think that? Go ahead.
I wrote about this earlier this week, and I said two things that I thought were not especially controversial. I said, number one, the Tampa Bay Lightning are the best team in the NHL no matter what happens in the playoffs. And number two, they probably aren't going to win the Stanley Cup, because that's just how the NHL works these days. It's a league with lots of parity. You have to win four rounds. You would have to be an overwhelming favorite in each one of those rounds to be an overall favorite to win four of them in a row. And even the Lightning, a team that may be the best team of the cap era, are not a favorite. I mean, they're probably about a 20 or 25 or 30% chance to win the Cup. And my argument was, let's remember that if and when that day comes, that they run into a hot goalie or whatever else, and they get eliminated from the playoffs, they were still the best team this year. You know, and yet I was surprised how many people I had pushing back on either end of that argument, either telling me that no, the Lightning are overwhelming favorites to win the Cup this year.
I mean, they're definitely not, but sure.
They're not. I mean, they are the favorite in the sense that they have the better
right,
odds of any
but
other
it's,
team.
But it's them
versus
if
15.
It's them versus the field, right. Yeah.
Exactly. And, or two, telling me that if they don't win the cup, they will not be the best team. Because by definition, the team that wins the Stanley Cup is always the best team of that season. And the playoffs are different and you have to find a way and all of this stuff. So I just wanted to get that out there. I don't care if the Lightning gets swept in the first round by the Hurricanes or whoever
else. That would actually be insanely funny.
It would be. They're still the best team. Like, that's it. Like, who was the best team in 2018-19 season? Is Tampa. Like, they could lose every game from here on in, and they're still number one. But I am kind of with you guys. I hope that, you know, as a Leafs fan, obviously I don't want the Lightning to win because that means the Leafs don't win. But I think if you're just as a fan, it, like, the Lightning are what you want your team to be when they grow up right now. This is the kind of season that even, you know, if you're a Leafs fan and you're looking at this young roster that's being put together, the Lightning is what you want this roster to turn into. If you're a team, if your team is bad and they're rebuilding, and you know, it's the Sabres, the Senators, or the Oilers, or whatever, the Lightning is what you want to get to. And to see a team be this good and then not win, I think in some sense would be kind of depressing. Like, I mean, I know we love upsets and it's that time of year, and you know, it'll be a fun story if and when somebody does knock them off. But there is, you know, I don't think it would be fun in this day and age to have a dynasty team like the Canadiens or the Oilers or the Islanders that win 4 years in a row. But having the best team win, you know, if the best team never wins, then there aren't any upsets. Upsets don't matter if they happen every single year. And if a team is this much better, there's a part of me that would like to see them win, or if only because if it's my team that's at the 130-point team in a few years, I don't want to be going into the playoffs going, yeah, but that probably doesn't matter because who cares? You're just going to run into some goalie who's going to steal a series from you.
Yeah. You just discussed the entire lifespan of a Capitals fan, by the way.
Yes. Like
the idea of...
Yeah.
I mean, you're the best team every year, and then at some point you're just like, oh, who gives a shit, because we're just going to lose anyway.
Yeah.
And then the thing that you described at the start is kind of the Dan Steinberg argument, which was that you should appreciate the achievement of your team no matter what happens in the postseason. I don't necessarily always agree with that aspect of it. But in the Lightning's case, like, they've got like 9 games left, I think. I think they have to go maybe 8-1 to break the record. Like, if they somehow break the record, like, there's no taking that away from them.
No, I mean, they can break 2 records. They can break the wins record that the Red Wings own. They can break the points record of the 77 Canadiens. In both cases, obviously, the fact that we have the shootout now does have an impact on that, because there's more points available. But it's also the salary cap era. Like, you're not supposed to be able to do this. And my argument was not that, hey, if the Lightning go out in the second round against the Bruins, that Lightning fans should be happy. My argument is not that the Stanley Cup is less important than the President's Trophy. It's obviously not. My argument is just don't come back to me in the offseason and go, well, you know, clearly the Lightning weren't the best team because they, you know, Tuukka Rask got hot and made 50 saves in Game 7.
Right.
They are the best team. Sometimes in the NHL, in fact, most times in the NHL, the best team doesn't win the Stanley Cup. That's just reality, and we got to get our heads around it.
Would you feel better if they got knocked off by the Hurricanes or like a wild card team versus losing in the conference final? Yeah. I almost feel like the shock and awe of losing to a Cinderella team would be more palpable and understanding than having them be built up to be this tight and then get knocked off by like the second best team.
I disagree. I mean, seeing them go out to a wild card team would be that kind of shocking upset, and those are fun, but that would also, to me, just reinforce how meaningless the regular season is and how ridiculous it is that we spend 6 months pretending to care about all of these results when really it just feels like you either make the playoffs or you don't. Nothing else matters.
Yep.
I want to see them, if they're going to go out, I want to see them go out on their shield in a great 7-game series against the Capitals or the Bruins or the Leafs or in the Stanley Cup final. You know, let them go up against a team where at the end of it, we're left saying, you know what, that team really rose to the occasion and gave them 7 good games, and you know, the best team for the last 2 weeks won the series. They weren't the best team overall, but they deserved it. And not just because, you know, some fluke happened or some goalie got hot or whatever it is. Cause you know, I do want to feel like all of this stuff that goes on and, you know, all the trades and all the signings and everything that goes into building a 130 point team, that actually matters. And it's going to be hard to feel that way if they just get bounced out in the first round, you know, and by a wild card.
Hmm. All right. I mean, they could get bounced out in theory by the Leafs. That is, if the Leafs don't implode by then.
Right.
Yeah.
So what stock do we put into this Mike Babcock versus Kyle Dubas feud in which Mike Babcock's like, you know, we'd be winning a lot more games if we had better depth and, you know, need the depth to win. Just the coach. Not responsible for the depth.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote about it this week where it's like he keeps making insanely bad personnel decisions and then going, I don't know why we keep giving up 35 shots a night. Like, it's beyond the Ron Hainsey thing. It's beyond, you know, it's beyond Willie Nylander playing a bunch of time with Connor Brown and Nazem Kadri. Just some of the personnel decisions he makes because he's Mike Babcock and he thinks he's a genius and you know, he kind of has a more old school mentality. Like, that's what's holding the Leafs back. And, you know, I don't think that they're necessarily like it's because the last five games they've given up 26 goals or whatever the number is now. I found a stretch from last season where Tampa gave up like 31 in six games, so or something like that. Like, it happens. You give up a shitload of goals sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's kind of a season-long trend where they're getting by on really thin margins because they're super talented. Like, they don't outshoot the other team a lot. They give up too many high-quality looks, that kind of thing. But it doesn't matter because they're so good up front. And you can like, if you're Mike Babcock and you're really trying to reduce the number of high quality looks you're giving up and giving your chance a team to win 5-3 instead of 5-4, you know, on average or whatever the number is, you can do that, but he hasn't done it. And I think in part because he hasn't needed to.
Mm-hmm. And the other weird thing is, you know, his whole thing about how, you know, good teams have enough depth that when guys get hurt, they don't miss them. I mean, first of all, that's not really
true.
I don't think. I mean, we're in a salary cap league. There's what team can lose two of their top four defensemen and just not
the Pittsburgh
not miss
Penguins?
A beat,
I guess
right?
Is the answer to that.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah. But the other piece of it, and other people have pointed this out, is, you know, the reason the Leafs don't have more depth and couldn't add more depth at the deadline is because of their cap situation. And at least part of the reason they're in this cap situation is because they have guys like Patrick Marleau, which was a Lou Lamoriello signing, but one that has lots of Mike Babcock fingerprints on it, up to and including the fact that Marleau continues to be one of their most used forwards, even though he's very clearly at this stage in his career not one of their best players. So,
yeah.
To answer Greg's question, how much stock do you put in this? I kind of went from putting almost zero stock in it a few days ago because it just felt like a very Toronto thing. Like, this is... You know, there's 10 games left in the season. The team's not playing well, but we already know where they're going to finish in the standings. We know who they're going to play in the playoffs. We need something to talk about for 2 weeks, so let's overparse some harmless comments that somebody makes and turn it into a story. But then yesterday, Elliot Friedman led his 31 Thoughts column with this, and Elliot is not a guy who typically leads...
He's not throwing gasoline on the fire. Yeah.
He's not a guy who you know, he doesn't chase stories that have nothing to them very often, and he certainly doesn't write several hundred words in his lead. And so, you know, I wonder if maybe there is a little bit more to this and that some of the people who are particularly plugged in have a sense that there's more to this. So I've kind of gone from putting no stock in it to putting not much stock, but cautiously watching, because it's an interesting situation. Because if there is any sort of, you know, division between Kyle Dubas and Mike Babcock. I mean, that's not unusual. That happens sometimes in the NHL. The GMs and coaches don't have to be best pals. But Babcock's got 4 years left on the richest contract any coach ever signed. So he's pretty secure. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, Kyle Dubas just got that job because Brendan Shanahan handpicked him, knowing it was going to cost him Mark Hunter, knowing it was probably going to cost him Lou Lamoriello, who is Shanahan's mentor. You know, it's not like if I'm Mike Babcock, I don't necessarily want to go to war with this kid assume that I'm going to be the one left standing, because both of these guys are in pretty secure spots. So it's kind of a situation where they've either got to work it out or at the very least stop saying things publicly and get into the off season, and then, you know, you can kind of figure it out where you go from there.
First of all, counting down the days until someone writes the Mark Hunter would have a better relationship with Mike Babcock story. That's coming.
Believe it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is that I wonder, though, man, like if they don't succeed in the playoffs and you have a guy that's, you know, on that contract with the accomplishments that he does have. And while I think that he's a horribly overrated coach, there's no question he's got more of a pedigree of success than does Kyle Dubas. I wonder if you have a guy being like, we don't have the troops. And then, you know, the other guy, you know, being a novice GM, I wonder where the sentiment is. I wonder who wins that argument. I agree. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Kyle Dubas has the endorsement of Brendan Shanahan. Like, he's the handpicked guy. But when you have a coach with a Stanley Cup ring being like, I need the guys to win, and we don't have them, that's a hard argument for Kyle Dubas to win.
Where do we get him, Mike? Like, we have no cap room. We have no cap room, partly because you wanted Patrick Marleau, partly because you thought Nikita Zaitsev was this great defenseman worth locking in for the long term. I know Mike Babcock doesn't like Garrett Sparks. He's made that very clear. His constant passive-aggressive nitpicking at Garrett Sparks, a young goaltender in his first full year in the NHL, all year long. I know he wanted Curtis McElhinney or whoever else, but the fact of the matter is Garrett Sparks is an okay goalie on pretty close to a league minimum contract. That's what the Leafs need. They don't have room for a $2 million backup goalie right now, and that's not Mike Babcock's fault, but part of it is because he's got the guys he's asked for. So, you know, if I'm Kyle Dubas behind closed doors, I'm sitting there going, Mike, here's our roster. Here's the catch. Show me where the room is to go out and get you these more Ron Hainsey types that you feel comfortable using as a security blanket instead of these younger guys that we have sitting here in the press box year in or night in and night out because you never use them. And then we get to the end of the year when we need a young defenseman to step in, and the guys that we have haven't been playing all year because you want Ron Hainsey to do 22 minutes a night.
I love it.
It's going to get ugly for Mike Babcock in Toronto. If they lose in the first round again this year, it's the honeymoon will be over. The seat will start to get hot. I know he's got like $24 million left on his deal, but remember, the Maple Leafs ate $25 million to get rid of David Clarkson just so that they would have the option to put Nathan Horton on the LTIR, and they didn't use it. So, this idea that because Mike Babcock makes a lot of money and has years on his contract that he's somehow completely safe, one or two years down the line, I don't buy that.
Speaking of hot seats, you can get the hottest seats in the world if you use our friends at SeatGeek.
That's really good. Damn, dude. A+ this week.
Getting tickets online can be far too complicated with hundreds of sites and varying levels of reliability. It's hard to know hubba, 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 money, money, money. Who do you trust? That's why SeatGeek is the way to go. SeatGeek pulls millions of tickets into one place so you can easily find the seats that you want for a price you're willing to pay. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to ticket source for everything from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. I have it on my phone. I use it every time I need to go out and get myself and my lady a ticket for anything. Big green circles. The bigger the green, the deeper the green. That's the ticket you want to get. That's the deal that you're looking for. It's an easy and really great way to shop for tickets for anything, comedy, theater, sports, what have you. Best of all, listeners to Puck Soup get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase We love when you people use this code, take a picture of, well, you don't really take a picture of yourselves at the game, I've noticed. You kind of just take a picture of the ice or whatever, and that's fine. That's a good way to do it, too. And you know what? Selfies are overdone these days. And in fact, I was looking out of the window of my apartment the other day, and I saw a woman on the sidewalk posing for a selfie with the kind of MySpace arm arc above her head with the camera phone. And I got to tell you, very few things are more awkward in life than seeing someone take a selfie. So maybe better just point it at the ice. Point being is to use the SeatGeek code. You're getting your tickets. You're getting your $10 off. Download the app today and enter the promo code SOUP. S-O-U-P, that spells soup. That's soup for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. Western Wildcard Race is tightened, which is kind of crazy, to the point where the Blackhawks actually have a shot again.
They do.
Back in it. I know.
Kind of.
I know.
They don't.
Arizona. I mean, hold on. Well, and so does Vancouver. Arizona, Minnesota, Colorado, Chicago, Vancouver. Who pick one team that gets in behind Dallas? Who do you want?
Who do I want, or who do I think it's going to be? Because those are two different answers.
Who do you think it's going to be, and who do you want? Go ahead.
I think it's probably going to be Arizona. They just, you know, they have the extra points, and that they're up a win right now, and that matters a lot. With 9 games left, the only team I think is really the team I would want to make it is Colorado, because I think they're the only actual other good team. I think they might be the only other team with a positive goal difference in the whole bunch. So,
yeah, I like Arizona for both answers. I would like to see them in the playoffs, and I think they are clearly still in the best position. But look at Chicago, man. They got Philadelphia yep. tonight, and then they go Colorado, Arizona. I mean, you win
that's the whole race, dude.
That's it right there. I mean, those are the teams you're chasing. So it's not like, I mean, it's hard to make up 4 points. In fact, they probably wouldn't have the tiebreaker. So they have 5 points, because the problem is, you know, you can make up 5 points on one team. They have to go cold and you get hot, but that can happen. But when you're trying to leapfrog 4 teams or 3 teams, it's almost three. Impossible, because they're not all going to go cold on you at the same time, unless you're playing them, you know. And yeah, obviously you have to run the table and go 8-2 or 9-1. But if all those wins are coming in regulation against teams you're chasing, it's not completely out of the realm of possibility, especially if Corey Crawford just goes nuts over the last few weeks. Like I wrote about this week, and I said, you never want to be relying on a hot goalie in the long term, but with 2 weeks left in the season, give me the hot goalie. And we'll figure the rest of it out.
I want it to be Arizona. It's going to be Chicago. NBC is going to fix the game, so Chicago plays Calgary in the first round, and they could put those games on actual television and not on, like, NBCSN, which is where the Calgary games will otherwise be.
How are they going to fix it so Chicago makes the playoffs and wins the draft lottery? That's going to be the challenge.
I said NBCSN, throwing shade at where the games will probably be. I meant CNBC, of course.
Yes.
Or the golf channel, for that matter. Yeah. No, Chicago, first of all, Chicago is not going to win the lottery. LA is going to win the lottery. That's a more important market for them to get going.
That's
again,
fair.
Is LA. But yeah, I feel like it's going to be Chicago. I feel like Arizona is doing the thing, but maybe hasn't been there before. And I feel like what's the worst case scenario would be Minnesota, because nobody gives a shit about
That's
them.
That's absolutely but correct.
The second worst case scenario would be Chicago, because we're just like, who cares? But, you know, it's going to happen. It's just like, there's no denying it. They have a game in hand, too. So Blackhawks, baby. Feel the fever.
Yeah.
Yay.
I actually...
But the thing is, if they make the playoffs, though, then Canes win in the heart. That's the other thing, too, about the situation.
Yeah.
It's true.
It sucks. You hate to see it.
The darkest timeline.
Yeah.
Indeed. The Carolina Hurricanes played Duck Hunt this week when they won over the Pittsburgh Penguins with Justin Falk and Michael Ferland sitting between the benches where Pierre Maguire would stand and pretending their sticks were shotguns and shooting ducks on a Jumbotron, which was, again, now,
no,
now
it
we've,
wasn't
now
on the Jumbotron.
Reached...
They were using the glove. The other players were using the gloves the ducks.
Right, but
it was both.
Right, the gloves were the ducks, but it was also on the Jumbotron as they were doing it. We've now reached the point where the Carolina Hurricanes are doing multimedia presentations for their celebrations after games, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, they're sure. doing like the SNL digital shorts of the storm surge. Like.
Yeah.
All right.
Are you so you're offended that they're not done live now, that there is a certain recorded aspect to it?
I'm not offended. It's just like, man, they ran out of ideas fast. They didn't think they were winning this many fucking games.
That's gonna be the next Don Cherry rant. Like, you know, they were doing it improv for a real long time. Now it's pre-recorded. so pissed off. I talked to Justin Falk actually for a Q&A this week on ESPN and found out that it's not so much that he was a huge NES fan. He was actually a guy who was bummed he didn't get to go hunting with his friends back in Minnesota during hockey season. And his suggestion was, is there a way I can hunt ducks? And then somebody at the Hurricanes is like, how about we put Duck Hunt on the Jumbotron? He's like, all right.
Yeah, it was one of the old players.
Old guys, yeah.
Because that's the thing. You know how you know Justin Falk didn't play NES? He's under 30. He was probably maybe late Super Nintendo, early N64 would have been his wheelhouse.
Yeah, I asked him. He was an N64 guy, he said.
Yeah,
Ocarina
of Time.
So that's not a surprise.
Coming soon to a storm surge near you.
Did you ever use the gun, the light gun for the NES? I never had it, I don't think. I used it at like my friend's place.
My platform came with the classic Super Mario Brothers / Duck Hunt cartridge. And that also came with, but we had a couple other games. Hogan's Heroes was, or no, Hogan's Alley. It's called Hogan's Alley.
No, you said Hogan's
Heroes.
I know
what I said. You don't think this is a very easy? This is a very easy one to conflate. A game I haven't thought about in 25 years.
It's an 8-bit game where you sneak around a Nazi concentration camp and then try to avoid Sergeant Schultz.
Yeah, that's
the Hogan's Heroes.
Yeah,
game.
No, it was like one of those. It was certainly a thing in old movies or whatever, where like a cop would be training and like a bad guy would jump out, but then also a mom pushing a stroller would jump out and you get it was a game like that. There was a side scrolling like paintball capture the flag game called Gotcha that you use the gun for. So yeah, we got pretty good mileage out of it.
Did you ever have the robot? My rich friend had the robot.
We didn't have the robot. We had the we had the one that made it like an arcade thing with a joystick.
The NES Advantage.
The NES Advantage. That's what it was called. Yeah, had
that.
That
was good.
That kicked ass.
That was key. That was key for for Contra, you didn't really need anything because you get 30 lives. But the NES Advantage had the rapid fire button, which was always good for games like that.
Yeah, and for track and field, boy, if you ever wanted to dominate a game of track and field, you just throw on the NES Advantage, and you're finishing that 100 meter dash in about 6 seconds.
Sean, light gun or no light gun? For you?
I never even had an NES. I was a Genesis guy, but I did. I used it at a friend's house, and I remember it like not working well, and that's just kind of being like this sucks. Let's play something else.
So are you living the dream now that there's going to be a Sonic the Hedgehog movie?
You know, no, because I never even back then I never like played the game games. I was just always I was playing all the sports games. That was pretty much it was like NHL and Tecmo and NBA Jam and I was good.
Sonic 3 is the only good Sonic game. I'm gonna put it out there. Well, of the
was that the one with Knuckles?
Yeah.
Okay. I never really played Sonic either because I was a Mario guy, and it was a real Blur and Oasis thing for me. Like, I was a Blur guy,
sure.
Couldn't like Oasis. I was a Mario guy, couldn't like Sonic. Just that you draw your battle lines in the sand, and then you never cross them, obviously.
That's right.
Mario and Sonic, Israeli and Palestinians for the video game era. That's how I see it.
The fun thing right now is my, you know, obviously my kids play a lot of video games, and I never have any idea what they're talking about when it comes to like Fortnite or whatever else, but they're really into Mario Kart right now. And so I can, they'll be talking about it, and I'll be like, oh yeah, no, I know, like Bowser. Yeah. Like I know that, and you know, mm-hmm. yeah, I know what a mushroom does, and they're actually impressed. I finally have useful knowledge, and I don't have the heart to tell them it's from like 35 years ago.
You mentioned Mario Kart. Obviously, that brings up the Stanley Cup champion Washington Capitals. We're not going to talk about the ins and outs of the White House controversy, but I do want to mention this news that broke during the taping of this podcast. According to Isabel Kashirdian of the Washington Post, the Capitals announced there will be no official ceremony or media availability while the team is in the White
Very
House.
Cool.
The team will take part in a private tour and will meet the president in the Oval Office. So no propaganda. No standing there glad handing, no laughing along with Trumpy's jokes.
Well, I would disagree it's no propaganda. Because,
I mean, there's
like,
probably
going to
be like, but it's not.
And taking your fucking picture
but
with them.
It's not nearly as bad as standing there for a press conference.
Sure.
You know, I think we could agree on that. This is interesting to me because, like, the one person that I keep coming back to is Braden Holtby. Like, he is the last person that I could think of on that team now that would want to sit there and just goof along with this guy as he's doing his shit in front of him. And I wonder how many of the Capitals, like I want to know the inside story of what factions of this team who clearly aren't Ovechkin and Kuznetsov or Orlov came together and said, I don't want to stand there for a fucking press conference with this guy. Cause that's clearly what happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's probably true. Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, you gotta be fucking kidding me, going to these stupid, like, it's an honor and all that shit, sure, but, like, Devontae Smith-Pelly's on that team. You know what I mean? Like,
I agree.
Shout out to Brett Connolly for just being like, I'm not fucking going, fuck that.
Yeah, yep, yeah, word. That's all we need to say about that, I think. The question of the week this week. In honor of Ichiro Suzuki retiring after 75-year career, I'm not sure how many years Ichiro played.
Something,
but it seems
close,
like
yeah.
a really
like
long
late
time.
Like 98 was his first season, right? 98 or 99. Mm-hmm. So it's been a long fucking time.
Is Ken Griffey Jr. still the quintessential Mariner, or is it
Ichiro? Oh, it's Ichiro. It's Ichiro for sure.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay. Did he ever have a candy bar like Ken Griffey Jr. did?
No. Maybe in Japan. I don't know what goes on over there.
Mm. If it was in Japan, it probably had puffed rice in it. That's usually what a Japanese candy. Most of the Japanese candy I get is either puffed rice or also those little cookie pandas that have chocolate inside of them are also very tasty as well.
I would imagine those are Chinese, but sure.
Oh. Well, you know, now that I think about it, you're probably right. The panda, not synonymous with Japan.
Not as much as you might think. Yeah.
Yeah. The panda's definitely used in, like, Hello Kitty world. That's Japanese, right?
It is.
Okay. But the pandas that we get here are given to us by our friends in China.
That's right.
Okay. Just to clear it up. So the question was, with Ichiro retiring, what was the most heartbreaking retirement that you had as a hockey fan? Rob Cummings writes in, Dan Girardi's ankles retiring seasons ago from all the burning. Boner Ivor writes in, Paul Kariya is up there, dude gave everything and never got a cup. And obviously, like, the way he went out sucked.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Yep.
Luke writes in, not his retirement per se, because it wasn't, but Modano's final game in Dallas was a literal tearjerker for both him and the fans. His importance to the team and helping grow hockey in Texas can't be understated. That's exactly right. But as we know, not a retirement at all. Had it the worst, one of the worst codas of any player in the history of the NHL. Jeff Wright says, Gretzky, I cheered so loud when he got an assist in his last game that my folks thought I had broke something. But his last game was as a Ranger, so yeah. I kind of like and have to knock
also,
that down a peg,
also the most anticlimactic possible ending of having the game go into overtime and then end with him sitting on the bench with the other team scoring.
Mm.
Ooh, yeah, that's I forgot about that. That sucks.
Yeah.
Gretzky sitting on the bench like it's a shootout, right?
Yeah, exactly.
In an international competition.
And the camera just cuts to him, and he's just like, oh, okay, I guess I'll just stand up and leave then. All right.
Jim Iserman writes in, Iserman. Well, that seems kind of...
Who was the goalie that Tomáš Hertl forced into retirement by scoring four goals on him? The Rangers goalie?
Oh,
that's
God,
that one's pretty
it.
Good.
Who was it?
Damn.
Oh, that's... It wasn't Valaquette, was it? No, I think it was later.
Yeah,
later
it would have
on.
Been later on for sure.
Oh man, no, you're right. There was a goalie that he forced into retirement.
Just never played again.
Iserman, he was more than just a really good hockey player to me. He was an example of how you should conduct yourself. Talk is cheap. He led by example, playing hurt, not complaining about adversity, and owning every result, good and bad. Iserman also taught me that you can disparage your Russian teammate behind the scenes and people will still think that you're a great guy. Neil W. writes in, went to see Timu Solani's last regular season game when he grabbed Jiggy to start to skate a lap together, waving goodbye to the fans, and that saw them raise a cup together. It gave me chills. A hockey memory I will never forget. Terry Thomas, Ray Bourque! Didn't he retire the day he won the cup? Him finally winning it was so awesome to watch. Captain Joe Sakic didn't even raise it after accepting, just passed it right to Ray. If that didn't hit you in the feels, I don't know what else will.
Still think he should have just sent Ray Bourque up there, but sure.
Exit 16W, that was the,
oh, we
the
remember.
Thing that year when they beat the Devils, yeah. CC says, gotta go with the Sedin twins just because it caused Lozo to stop covering hockey. Ryan Kearns, Nick Lidstrom, knowing that the dynasty was over. That's the real kick in the balls retirements, is that when you know the magic
that's
is
it,
done.
Yeah.
Because these guys have like left. Yeah, that's a really good choice. So there you go. Anybody on this very podcast have any retirements that really struck you in the feels, as they say?
The worst for me, like to me, it's kind of like what's a retire? Like Wendell Clark is my favorite player, but when he retired, he was done. It was better for him to retire than to go play fourth line minutes for the Blue Jackets or whatever. But the one that got me was Doug Gilmour, because of the way it happened, where he obviously comes to Toronto, has the great leads the great resurgence, gets traded away. Years later, they trade for him at the deadline to come back and lead them in the play. Well, not even lead them, but to be a depth piece of their playoff run. His last run back in Toronto, and in his very first game, blows out his knee, suffers a career-ending injury, and never plays again. That sucked. Mm.
Yeah, for me, a guy I always really liked as a player, Mark Savard. Because he tried to come back and he scored that big goal and threw his stick into the stands and all that, and then just being like, "Nah, I can't do it anymore." Like that was such a bummer.
For me, it was Ken Danico, only because he's Ukrainian like me. But also because he was the constant on the Devils since I became a hockey fan. Like, he was just, like, always there. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of weird to think of a Devils team that didn't have him. But he was, like, 39, and right. His knees were shot. And, like, it was time for – it wasn't, like, a tragic story. I mean, it was clearly time for him to retire. But it was, like, one of those, like, oh, wow, now things are different. Like, there's no longer a Ken Danico on the Devils, and that's kind of weird. Luckily, he came back to be a color commentator who – he's a real great personality, but maybe not the most best X's and O's guy.
Maybe not.
But then again, he's replacing Chico Resch. So, I mean, anything. Oh, Doc, let me tell you, this sausage I'm eating is the best. Oh, there's a goal. This sausage I'm eating is the best thing I've ever. Oh, another one. It's got peppers. It's got onions. Oh, no, there's a fight.
Harry,
no, everybody's involved. Yeah, it's that whole thing. All right. That's Puck Soup for this week. A little bit of a shorter one because we went over 2 hours last week. I'm Greg Wyshynski. You can listen to my other podcast, ESPN on Ice, with Emily Kaplan. You can listen to me and Emily on the Richard Deitch podcast this week on The Athletic to talk about how we do this shit. And then also find me on Twitter, at Wyshynski, WYSHYNSKI.
Ryan Lambert, sports.yahoo.com/author/Ryan-Lambert. But mostly sign up for the newsletter on the Patreon. Mm-hmm. It's $4 a month. $3 a month if you are going to also subscribe to the $5 bonus episodes. And, you know, I'm doing music and movie recommendations on there. My album recommendation last week, very popular with people. A few people reached out and said they really dug it. And, yeah, also, obviously, hockey takes and that kind of thing. I'm going to review Us this week, the new Jordan Peele. So I'm seeing that tonight. So, yeah, cool. Check it out. It's not expensive, and I like doing it. So
nice. There it is.
Right on. You can find me at The Athletic on Twitter at Down Goes Brown. This week, I'm breaking down the remaining nights on the schedule. We're down to just over 2 weeks, and you don't have to watch all of them because some of them are not very good, but some of them are really good. And so let me help you out and determine that. And Martin Biron was the goalie retired by Thomas Hertl because I picked it up because it was bugging me. So if you were yelling at your device, we heard
Read Sean's article on what nights to not watch hockey and realize he does not work for a rights holder. That's Puck Soup for this week. We'll talk to you next week. Check out the mailbag on the Patreon. It's got amazing stuff this week. And we'll talk to you next week. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Later, gang.
Today's episode of Puck Soup was sponsored by Kavo, a new friend of the podcast. You may have heard the ad earlier in the show. It's a pretty good one. Clean up your remote control clutter with Control Center by Kavo. You can plug in your streaming device, your sound system, your cable, your satellite, whatever game console you're using, and control everything connected to your TV with one easy-to-use voice-controlled remote. So you're not juggling around 55 different remotes and they're all falling under the couch cushions and stuff. Shop now and get 40% off Control Center with promo code SOUP. That's S-O-U-P. That spells SOUP. That's a $59.95 price, 40% off of regular pricing of $99.95. Service plan is required. The first 45 days are free. Control Center is available at caavo.com and also at Best Buy. That's Control Center by Kavo. Kavo.com to go check out what's going on. Promo code SOUP for 40% off. Control Center by Kavo, one remote that does it all.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.